Welcome to season two, episode two of the Hooked podcast. This episode, we've got Sean Savage from Streaker Marine. Sean's got a lot of background and a lot of knowledge in the boating industry. His family's been in the business now for quite some time, so we're very fortunate to get him on the show. So sit back, strap yourself in, and let's go for episode two. So welcome to the Hook podcast, mate.
Thank you. No, it's been exciting, mate. I was excited to get the gig. I'm glad I'm here.
I'm glad you're on. So guest speaker tonight is Sean Savage from Streaker Marine. Little backstory, we met Sean when we first bought our Quintrex Trident a fair while ago now. And since then, we've stayed in touch. Sean's always got good advice when it comes to buying boats and things like that. So I always give him a buzz and see what he's up to. And then before we bought the Sailfish, we were actually talking with Sean about cruise craft.
So correct. We went back
and forth there. So yeah, mate, obviously Streaker Marine, a family-owned business. It's been around for a while, so it's in your blood, I suppose.
Yeah, look, it's what we love, mate. It's a family business, as you said. My dad and my uncle started it in 1973. Since then, we were a manufacturer, retailer for a long time, so we made our own product in Streaker Boats, and that was what we did. We're a manufacturer, retailer. As the second generation came through, so my dad's still heavily involved in the business, but my uncle retired. So my brother and I brought his half of the business, and now we're strictly retail. We actually sold our manufacturing side of the business to Cruise Craft. So they own our molds now. And we, as you said, we do the Quintrexes, which is how we first met. Now, I was thinking, what year was that? When did you get the Trident?
So we had the...
About 2010 or something, was it?
No, I think it was 2014.
Is that right? Yeah, okay. So Quintrex is fantastic, mate. If you can get in with that, what they call the Telwater group, which is Quintrex and Stacer and all that sort of stuff, that's really where you want to be if you want to be in the retail industry in the marine game. Quintrex is their number one brand, so we're always honored to look after those guys, mate. They're fantastic. Cruise Craft's another brilliant family-owned business up in Brisbane, and they just focus on high-end trailer boat stuff. You know, like they just work really hard on that 6 to 7 meter hard top game fishing, you know, like that really high-end, the best quality, the best fittings. They don't rush them through. That's just if you want the best fiberglass trailer boat on the market, we feel that we cater for that. Yamaha outboards on all our boats, and Yellowfin's another brand that's done through this Telwater group that we've taken on probably the last 12 to 18 months. And that plate market, especially in these southern states, that's incredibly big. And they sort of hit the ground running with those. They're doing really, really well with their plate market around the country. So we're very lucky, mate, with Quintrex, Cruise Craft, Yellowfin, and Yamaha. We feel we got the best products out there. We try to do the best customer service we can. We're very well known for that. That's why we get good relationships.
I'll 100% vouch for that. I know when we bought the Trident, like it was all the boats are a lot of money these days.
Of course,
but that was a lot of money for us. And I remember when I drove down and picked it up, you guys were down there. The welcome that I got was like, I honestly just felt like I'd walked into, you know, a high-end Ferrari dealership or somewhere like that.
And yeah, that's what we pushed for.
Yeah, I was being handed the keys on a red carpet, and obviously you guys go out of your way, and you are well known for that, and that's, I think that's a very big feather in your cap. But the way that it come across, and like when you're there picking up that boat, you feel like you are the number one person in the shop at that time, and that you've worked that hard to do everything right by the customer. And when you're there, it's unbelievable, mate. Like I can 100% vouch for that. I still, to this day, obviously we've bought a couple of boats since then, but to this day, that has probably been the best experience I've had when I've bought a boat.
Yeah, fantastic. And it's so important. You're not buying an essential thing. You're buying something that you're passionate about. You know, if sports fishing is your passion, you need the boat and you want the boat and you study it and you're on boat sales every night looking at different things. And it's, you know, we're the same, mate. You know, we work with boats 24/7, but when the weekend comes, you know, we're doing the exact same thing. We're all over it. And it's got to be a real emotional decision. And we want to basically reward you for getting your dream, you know, like this is something that you work all your life for, and it shouldn't be underplayed. It's something that, you know, it should be a special moment in your life. And we don't ever forget, you know, what we're doing is we're making people's dreams. You know, like if you're into fishing or water skiing or whatever it is, it's what you think about 24/7, and you go to work to fund those dreams, I suppose. And we want to make sure that the expectations of what you're actually doing are far exceeded. And, you know, it's easy to get complacent with that sort of stuff when you've done it for years and years, but we really, really focus. And as I said, because we get as excited as the customers do, you know, where we still get so excited. I sold a 720 cruise craft today, and I was more excited than the customer about what we're doing and how we're building things and how we're setting certain things up. You know, I still get a massive kick out of it. And to do that for a job, I think so unique these days, you know, to do something you genuinely love. And
well, it definitely comes across with, like I said, with the dealings that we've had with you guys, it definitely comes across and it shows. And yeah, it's, like I said, it's a massive feather in your cap, especially being family owned, all that sort of good stuff. But the fact that there's so much passion behind what you guys do translates really well in your dealing.
I think the other cool thing is when you've actually got real trust and passion in the brands that you're selling. That's one thing to be in the industry you like, but when you're providing, you know, Yamaha reliability and cruise craft quality and all that sort of stuff, you know that you're actually providing something that's really going to set these guys up for the next so many years. Yep. It's not like you're selling something and, geez, I hope this doesn't come back next week. You know, there's none of that. And that's a really important part of it as well.
Yeah, 100%. Being able to stand behind those brands. We've been lucky along the way as well. Our journey's sort of growing now. And we've got some really good people that have got behind us and helped us along the way. So I know exactly what you're saying with particular brands that you like, you know, you've got the trust, the confidence in. So it's, yeah, I know exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah, your journey's been really cool to watch, actually, from the outsider looking in with where you guys started from. And I remember the first time you came to our showroom and you were explaining what you do and how your media channels were working. I thought, oh, that's really cool. I'll keep my eye on that. But it's where it's gone to in the last 6 or 7 years is amazing. And I've really, really enjoyed watching this. And then your new journey, what you've done now with the big girl, it's just so cool. You know, it's yeah, dreams that people are always inspired to. And you guys are starting to live it, which is, you know, that's just amazing.
Yeah, it is. Obviously, there's still a fair bit to go yet, but we're definitely getting there. Talking of the big girl, I know you've got a pretty big boat that you've got at home. So what are you currently fishing out of or boating in at the moment, mate?
As you said, we love boats. So we've got a few different ones. The big one that we have is a 4,000 offshore Riviera. So that's currently at Lake Centrums at the moment. It was actually in Painesville at the moment. And with the lockdown that we've had, we haven't been able to, you know, go down and give it a pat and take it for a run for the last sort of 5 weeks, which has been really, really getting to me, actually.
Yep.
I'm actually thinking about the thing I really enjoyed with that boat and getting back into the big boats is the journey of even traveling and along the coast and mapping out my course and where I'm going and what I actually want to achieve. So, you know, I've got that lake's entrance to the Patterson Lakes route absolutely nailed now. And we've got such beautiful waterways around here. You know, when you stop into to Refuge Cove, you could be anywhere. It's just an amazing destination. And that whole Wilson's Prom along there with the big islands and the big rocks out there and everything, I get a buzz out of that stuff. And, you know, those bigger boats, they give you the capability to be able to do those sort of things, do it safely and comfortably. And, you know, that's something that gets me really excited. I've also got a what they call a Force. It's a high-performance boat.
That's the ski boat, the one with the NISPRO.
Yeah, that's the NISPRO. We do a lot with these NISPRO guys. They, for people who don't know who NISPRO are, they do high-performance stuff for Yamaha Marine Outboards. So they're quite well-known for two things. They've got a computer flash program for their 4.2-litre motors. So that's their 225, 250, and 300.
Yep.
Then they make a supercharger kit. So my motor was started its life as a 225 horsepower Yamaha in their 4.2-litre range. Once you get their ECU flash, it goes up, I think it's 332 horsepower. And then they've got this Harrop's supercharger kit. So mine on the dyno, I think it's 497 horsepower currently.
And you ski behind this thing, don't you?
Well, I don't ski that much behind it anymore. I really enjoy it. Our background's water ski racing. So I've been a skier for a very long time in that high performance stuff. But now that I've got behind the wheel, I wish I did that a few years ago. You know, it's a bit of a buzz. So that's a genuine 102, 103 mile an hour boat. But you can do that in you know, a quarter of a meter consistent chop, and you can have three or four people on board with 100 liters of fuel, and you just sit on that 95 to 100 mile an hour, and just ultimate reliability. You know, like getting back to that Yamaha stuff, that motor was tuned and started its life as a 225, and I think the rev limiter on those is about 6,000 RPM. I haven't done any block piston work, anything like that, so no major build. It's just been bolting on a supercharger and giving it an ECU flash.
Yep.
I've been bouncing off the second or the third stage rev limiter, which is 7,300 RPM at 497 horsepower for the last 120 hours, and the thing's bulletproof. So I've got that, which is a lot of fun, and then I've also got a smaller ski boat, a Clinker, a 1979 model. It's got the full bench seat at the front with a 350 Chev and the wood grain deck and all that sort of stuff. So they're my three main ones. I think our moving forward for our own boating, you know, we'll keep going a little bit bigger. We'll get it to that 50, 55 sort of foot. And we'll do that longer east coast from Melbourne to sort of Hamilton Island, sort of neck of the woods. I think that'll be the next voyage. And, you know, with the way the world's changing and you're not doing those overseas holidays for a long period of time, it's just so amazing to see your own country. You know, we've got so many beautiful destinations. If you go by water or by land, you know, we're spoiled. So I want to explore that a bit more. And, you know, now that we've got kids and they really enjoy their fishing, I'm getting a lot more into that option of either doing the Murray trips and, you know, doing those longer sort of journeys on the Murray, camping sort of stuff, or just, you know, your days out of Port Phillip Bay, it's just as good. You know, we've got some really cool options, which is awesome.
Yeah, we are really spoilt here with our options for fishing and camping and just all our outdoor stuff. Obviously, at the moment with the restrictions, and there's a few things going on that's limiting stuff, but it's definitely got every option covered for those people that love the outdoors. It's interesting what you say about the big boat. I mean, obviously, from the time we've known you to now, we've progressively gotten bigger and bigger with our boats, and it definitely opens up a lot more doors. But everything comes at a cost. So, you know, the being able to get the word that there's a bite on down south or, you know, something like that, being able to hook up the trailer, off you go, drag the boat across country, and then bang, you're there. Those sort of options are a little bit more limited now. And then you start looking at fuel burns and things like that, all that sort of stuff. So if someone was looking at a new boat, mate, like, obviously, they'll be doing their research. What are probably three of your big hot tips for someone that's looking at getting into the boating market whether it be fishing, water skiing, whatever it is. But from a sales point of view, what would three of your best hot tips be for someone to look at and understand before they even start coming in and speaking to someone like yourself?
It's always nice to know a basic summary of what you sort of want to do with your boat, you know. So if it's going to be the snapper fishing or it's going to be the offshore sort of work, if it's inland, whatever it is, it's nice to know that there's something that sort of tickles you a little bit, something that gets you a little bit excited. Yep. So I think it's really important, you know, a lot of people, and there is variety now, a lot of people want that hybrid style boat that does a bit of everything. So, you know, we might be on the Ilden one weekend, might be off Mornington the next weekend, whatever it is. And there's options for that now. You know, the boats are so diverse on what they can do. They don't have to be, unless you're hardcore in one sort of department, they don't have to be too stereotyped in the one sort of style of boating. You know, for example, freshwater boats, you'd always have that real flat bottom, low-sided, super stable. But now you've got these massive Quintrex, like what they call their Frontiers and their Renegades. Like, if you jump on Facebook, go to the Renegade Owners Group as an example, there's dudes that are out, you know, 30K offshore, and there's other guys that are in the Daly River in Darwin. It's all the same boat, you know. So the diversity of what one boat can do now is really, really cool. I think, especially if it's your first boat, it's nice that when you get to the showroom, wherever you are, if the salesman can sort of ask you questions on what you're trying to achieve a little bit, it's nice to get a really good idea when, from coming from my angle, to actually speak to the customer. Because a lot of the times what they expect, they actually want. And after a bit of a conversation, what they end up actually looking at can be two totally different things.
Yep.
You know, the old days of thinking I'm just going to get an old clunker to start off with and sort of cut my teeth on that sometimes isn't the best idea, because A, that old stuff, you know, you're going to drop some coin on it. Things are getting pretty tired. You're probably not going to get the best experience that boating can sort of give you, because, you know, you're always dealing with something. And new boats these days, if you buy the right thing, that's a popular brand, the resale value on boats is amazing. You know, if you look after what you got and you keep it for that 3 to 7 year mark, especially this stuff that's Australian made, they just go up every year in price. They're Australian made sort of stuff and it gets more expensive. So they are a bit of an asset, you know. The days of thinking that you're just going to drop a heap of coin, throw it in the bin and have a bad experience, you know, with it. If you buy the right stuff, i.e., you know, like your big brands, like your Quintrexes and all that sort of stuff, they're actually a really quite a sound investment. You'll have your maintenance throughout the year, and it just depends on, you know, how much coin you really want to drop at it. You know, if you're in that 50, 60 grand mark, the options these days are really, really broad. You know, it just really depends on if we want cabin space, we want maximum fishing room. You know, there's some really cool options. And if you go to some of the bigger dealerships these days, they generally have everything on display. You know, we've got 85 Quintrexes on display at the moment, and we've got about 11 cruise crafts, you know. So when you come in, it's not like you've got two or three boats you're sort of looking at. You can really open your horizons and go, okay, if we got a cabin, we're going to have this extra room. We can stand up when we can drive. We're going to sacrifice some room at the back, but when the kids want to have a nap, we've got somewhere to put them. Or if you're thinking, no, I want that windscreen all the way forward. I'm going to be casting for squid and all that sort of stuff. You know, there's different things for that. Most people want to fish these days. You know, if you're going to buy a boat, it's typically for fishing, and that's what gets everyone excited. And the type of fishing that we're doing in Victoria now, like getting out the front and going for all this different stuff that we're catching, like the tuna runs and everything that's going on at the moment, you know, you can get a really nice 6 meter plate boat with like a folding hard top, 200 Yamaha on the back. You might be, you know, if it's a 6.2, you're around that 80, 85 grand, 90 grand mark. So for a brand new boat and you've got latest technology, four strokes and ripper sounders and all that sort of stuff, it's not, you know, everyone's got their own budgets for 85, 90 grand. You are getting a lot of boat for that. And that's what we find at the moment. You know, there's dudes that want to do their snapper fishing in summer. They want to do that bigger sort of gear in the winter, and they use their boats all year round now, which is really, really cool.
So have you seen a sort of a trend in the last couple of years with obviously being down in Melbourne and having been in the industry for so long? Has there been a trend for the bigger boats and for the guys doing exactly what you're saying, that all-rounder boat, but now we're going to start chasing bigger stuff. We're going to go a bit further. Obviously, technology throughout the years has got a lot better. So, like, I remember fishing when I was a kid with the two-stroke engines and stuff like that. You know, you'd get offshore, it'd blow a heap of smoke. There'd be issues. The fishing wasn't done the right way, all that sort of stuff. The reliability wasn't there. But now, obviously, because Yamaha, Hondas, all the brands now are pretty much on par and they're so reliable, people are pushing the limits, being able to go further offshore and do more. So has there been a trend with bigger boats, or is it?
Absolutely. It's a good point. You know, the thing that we've got now is we've got the technology gap in boating has jumped so significantly in the sort of last 5 to 7 years. So our motors are so much better than what they ever were. Our trailers work so much better. Our electronics can get us safely to places that we never really dreamed of. So we've got the advantage of having, you can have let's talk about a 720 cruise craft hardtop for a second. You can have a big boat as big as you really want to be towing, and you're going to have, these days, you're going to have the best trailers, best electric brakes. You got Yamaha four strokes. And with these four stroke stuff, mate, as you know, if you set them in the right sort of sweet spot, you know, that 4,200 RPM, your efficiency is just amazing. And when you bring them back for trawling, they'll just do it for days and days. They don't smoke or any of that sort of stuff. They're just so sweet. And, you know, we both love our Simrad electronics. And, you know, you've got these options now. And the thing that's really cool with this offshore stuff is even our weather apps, you know, you can get one of these big boats now. You really 3 days out, you should be pretty clear on what the weather's going to be looking at. You got these days, depending on how crazy you want to go with autopilots and radars and all that sort of stuff, that boating is just so much easier than what it's ever been.
Yep.
You know, 25 years ago, you had a shit trailer and a dirty two-stroke and your steering was no good and you had an old low-ranch chart plotter and you had to work out that light post there, if you went 40 degrees this way, you should be on the spot. You know, you needed to know the tricks of the trade. So when we did our handovers, you know, I used to do we do on-water handovers for everyone picks up a boat. We're big in the education. So we love to take, when the customer picks up the boat, they get the bow and the champagne and everything, we take them down the Patterson River and we teach them how to launch it, retrieve it, park it, use the anchor winch, all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
And 15 years ago, when you're doing that, you're like, okay, so the first 20 hours, you've got to pre-mix the motor at 50 to 1. And then when you start it, prime the primer ball 20 times, pushing the key, turn it, do this, do that, do this. And even I was getting confused, you know, like, so for a new boat buyer, they're thinking, what is going on here?
Yeah.
These days, you know, if you can use an iPhone and drive a car, you can drive a boat. So we're really, really fortunate in that instance. And that lets people buy bigger, cooler things. You know, you can buy, as using that example of a 720 cruise craft, you can get in that now and basically after an hour know how everything works, because a lot of it is just flat out common sense and it's very relatable to things you already use in your day-to-day life.
Yep.
So your Simrad gear, if you can use an iPhone, you can use that stuff. And if you know, the other cool thing we've got these days is even with like YouTube, you know, when you go and buy what you want to look at, you can jump on, type in Evo 3 on Simrad and you'll be an expert in 45 minutes.
Yep. You're 100% right. We just did the new fit out on the new boat. And obviously, like you said, we love Simrad. Simrad's been awesome. That's probably one of the best products that I've been fortunate enough to be involved with and have them guys sort of looking after us and helping us out. But the usability of it, you know, how easy it is, just like the detail that you get, everything is there and it makes your life so much easier. And especially for us, when we are targeting, you know, our game fish and things like that, there's already so many things going against you to get these fish, but having to hunt for them out of the equation, because you've got such good electronics, you can find bait, you can find birds, you can track weather, you know where you need to be, when you need to be there. It just makes it so much easier. So yeah, I know exactly.
Really does. So I, you know, it's exciting to see what's going to happen in the next 10 years. I think we've had that technology jump in that last sort of 10 years, like we're talking about 5 to 10 years, that this will probably see us through for the next sort of 5 or 6 years. I don't think we'll see astronomical changes. I think in the trailer boat world, we might see a few things with, you know, the way our steering works and the way our trim works and things like that. I think they'll make that a little bit more user-friendly. But I think we've really been spoiled the last sort of couple of years with really cool technology. The good thing about what we have with Yamaha is they've spent so much money releasing new motors, new technology stuff. So sometimes you'll go to your dealership and you'll go, yeah, cool, this guy's got a brand new Yamaha 4-stroke or a Honda 4-stroke, whatever it is. But sometimes that motor might have been on the market for the last 10 years. It's still the current model. It's the current model, so they haven't made it new yet, you know? So Yamaha's released their 75, 90, you know, their 40s, their 25s, their 150 drive-by-wires. There's so many new models. They had such an aggressive technology jump, which is just awesome for the end user. You know, the thing that I suppose 4-strokes always had against them was they're a little bit broader on power. They had a much broader torque curve, and they're a bit heavy for, you know, a lot of these boats that we're dealing with. A lot of these molds were made 30 years ago when you had an oil-injected 2-stroke on the back and two little dicky seats. Now you're at the back. Now you've got a full rear lounge and a big 4-stroke and all this sort of stuff. So, you know, the balance was a little bit out for a little while, I suppose. But now 4-strokes are as light as ever. You know, they're as light as what 2-strokes were, and their power is astronomical. That you just, you know, I start to think about what we used to use and think, geez, you know, like, we were the last sort of cowboys of that sort of stuff. Like, my kids will never have to deal with a you know, oil-injected 2-stroke in their lives and things like that. It's, yeah, I think we've been really, really fortunate with that.
So, obviously, being a fishing show, what's the biggest fish, or what sort of fishing, first of all, do you sort of dabble in at the moment, mate? Is it a bit of everything? Is there one particular sort of side of the thing that you're really
talking? I'm a little bit lucky. As I said earlier, my background was water ski racing, so that took up a lot of our time. Being with the Navico guys, I get to do some really cool stuff with those guys. I suppose my highlights of my fishing career would be the top of the North Island in New Zealand going for kingfish and harpooker. I was out with this new Simrad guy out there, and there was a few of the boys from Simrad on this thing, and we just struck it lucky. Like, we were absolutely killing it. So we were in about 100 metres of water, and he would literally watch his Simrad screen and go, all right, I think it was every 10 metres our line had a different colour. He'd go, all right, drop 3 lines. And we'd drop down 3 colours, boom, boom, boom. And and this harpooker, this destroy, whatever was on the back of it. It was amazing. So that was one of those moments I'll never forget. But probably my highlight was myself, my brother, and my dad. We go on the Daly River with a guy called Dave Silver. And he was a long-term low-ranch rep. He was my low-ranch rep for 20 years. And now he works for Wilson Tackle.
Yep.
He's a bit of a guru on the Daly River up there in the Northern Territory. And we jumped in this boat with this other guy, and this other guy's been going up there for 20 years. You know, he knows his stuff. His biggest fish, I think, was like an 87 or a 93 or some shit. And on the first day, my dad, we'd never been here before, right? My dad got a meter 3 barra.
Yep.
I got a 97, and my brother got a 94. All on the first day. And this guy's like, what is going on with you three? Like, what is, you know, I've been coming here for 20 years. But that barra fishing, you know, like, you feel like you're in Jurassic Park. You know, there's the wildlife and the crocodiles and hawks flying around. You know, it's just incredible. So that's somewhere that I really would like to think I'll sort of get to maybe every 2 years. And, you know, it's the thing with fishing is it does involve your friends and your family. So you know, I'm thinking about that stuff now. I'm thinking, I can't wait to take my son there. And then eventually he'll think the same thing with his boys and stuff like that. And it's, you know, it's really, really cool how it can just bring a family together for such a long period of time. It's something, you know, we see it all the time at the shop. You know, the son will come in with the brother and the uncle and lots of stuff, and they're all in it together.
Yep.
And I find that, you know, that's something that really is, I think it's pretty special with fishing, is the opportunity to really, you know, spend it with the people that you love, and that, you know, you can really have your time by yourself if you want to do it solo and have your own space and turn off the phone and all that sort of stuff. Plenty of merit to that, but it's just as exciting to go out with your mates and your family and your wife and all that sort of stuff and do that.
Yeah.
I'm lucky enough to work with my wife and my brother and my dad, but on the weekends, as I said, man, we're at the boat, turn the keys and off we go. So I suppose my next journey in fishing will be that offshore sort of stuff, because that's where my boating's going. And, you know, that's, I suppose, the, I don't know if it's the pinnacle, but in my world, I think the bigger the fish, the cooler the fishing at the moment. So I really want to check out what's out there.
You're in trouble. You've got the bug if you're doing this game, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely been good for us. Like, I mean, that's where we were always wanting to go. And you're 100% right about the family. Like, that's how I got into it. And, you know, we've spoken about it in past shows, how we got into it and all that sort of stuff. But now having dad on the boat, like seeing him wiring a marlin for a mate that's never, ever caught a marlin and stuff like that. And being able to back down and get him drenched at the back of the boat, you know, just all those little things. Now it's pretty cool, and it's been awesome going from the very small boat right up to where we are now, and being able to share that with my family, with Jackie, you know, with the people that have helped us along the way. So it's, I know exactly where you're coming from, and you know, you are lucky in a lot of ways working in the industry that you work in, because you get to provide these opportunities for families, individuals to go out and literally live their dreams. Like,
yeah, it's exactly right. You can't take your focus away from that. You know, yes, it is a business and everything, but you are providing things that I really treasure in my life. You know, like a lot of my stories start, you know, in my whole life, a lot of my stories start with, you know, a boat involved somewhere, you know, and I don't think that'll ever change. And you know, I find that really, really cool. And I hope that happens to all my guys. You know, I don't want, last thing you ever want when you're in that industry is to be selling boats and for people to be like daunted or not want to use them because of certain factors. You know, that's why we do these on-water handovers. We really want people to be educated and comfortable with what they've got and to be able to use it. You know, if it's a Saturday at 2 o'clock and they want to go for a run in the boat, I don't want it to be like a big deal for them. You know, I want them to be comfortable with what they're doing. And education is key. You know, everyone's got an Eddie expert mate that thinks they know everything. But if you can learn the right thing about your boat from the right people and go, okay, no, this is your battery switch, you got to have this thing off when you're not using it. You know, this real simple stuff. You know, that's key. And ever since we've really focused on the handover and the education part of it, you know, we see it in results with the service center. They're coming back with way more hours than we've ever seen. So, you know, it's very important that that people, you know, want to use their boat, because that's, they're going to get the same stories and adventures that we go through all the time.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously, being family owned, you and your brother are now starting to take it over. Obviously, your dad's still there, and I'm sure he's still controlling everything behind the scenes there. But
he's more of a transporter these days. We send him, you've got like a Hino truck, and we just send him everywhere. You know, like whatever needs to be picked up, he's in his truck with his orange vest, and boom, he's there. So my brother and myself have been owners of the business for maybe 4 years now, maybe something like that. And that's been going really well. You know, obviously this coronavirus is the first major obstacle we've had, and it's a doozy, but we've got a very, very strong business, and it's very well established, you know, so it's something that we'll certainly comfortably get through and we'll keep moving forward. My wife is our marketing manager for the business, so she runs all our marketing and our websites and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I can't hide from this place. Wherever I go, wherever I speak to, they're normally working there or they're involved somehow. So, you know, that's cool. My son, who's 7 years old, you know, he comes to work 2 days a week at the moment.
Yep.
He walks around. You know, he's already got the bug. He absolutely loves it. So it's an addictive place and it's an addictive industry, I suppose. Once you're in it, it'd be hard to leave, I'm sure.
Yeah, nice. So obviously going forward now with, you know, I know you spoke about doing the boats that you had and now that you've sold those to Cruise Craft,
mm-hmm.
Do you see any of the composites changing? So there's a lot of talk around carbon fiber and mm-hmm. all these different sort of composite hulls and things out there at the moment. There's been a couple of articles lately in Blue Water magazine about boat design, boat building. You know, you look at some of the American market stuff and what they're doing over in the US. Do you reckon we're going to see that transition over here into the Australian market, the different sorts of composites, fiberglass being maybe put to the side for a little bit longer? What's your sort of thoughts there, mate?
Yeah, it's an interesting topic. It's something that, to be totally honest with you, that was probably one of the big reasons why I didn't want to be a manufacturer. Boat manufacturing is a very hard game. It's a very niche market, and it's very difficult to have a successful boat manufacturing business. The thing about, I suppose, I was most daunted by being still a boat manufacturer is I really had to put all my eggs in that basket to try and make it half successful, which meant a full dealer network. I was going to really take away what my passion was, which was the retail end of the business. The other issue with being a boat manufacturer and maybe those mum and dad boat manufacturers that are out there, you know, that pump out sort of 10 boats a year and all that sort of stuff, is you need tooling and machinery to build these things these days. You don't just have like a, you know, a couple of saws and a wood chopper and you put it all together and put some resin on top of it and off you go. These things are built like they've never been built before. You need 3D printers. You need composite cutters. You need all these different graphic design network programs. And, you know, you go to Cruise Craft and you walk around and I just think to myself, I am so glad I'm not doing this because this is such a huge commitment. You know, like they're cutting sea deck. Like there's a machine that cuts it 24/7. And then everything in this boat is fully composite built. There's no wood inside these things whatsoever anymore. So I think the composite thing is something that is certainly catching on a lot more now, but it is an expensive exercise to do. You can't just decide I'm going to go from Oregon wood to composite today. You know, you need to have the machinery to do it. And you need to buy the tooling and have the professional and the educated staff to actually work this stuff. So, you know, my background of boat building is very much a hand-laid, you know, like it's an old-school style of boat manufacturing, Oregon wood and all glassed over and everything. But these days, you're kidding yourself. You've got to be making fully fiberglass-lined floors, side pockets, molds, injections. You've got to have the right foam-filled flotation and all that sort of stuff. And it's a really, really highly regimented and regulated industry now. You know, you've got to be doing everything to world-class standards. And there's not many fiberglass manufacturers that have that capability in Australia. I keep flagging my brands, but the two brands that stand out are Cruise Craft and Quintrex. And the reasons why is Cruise Craft have always been ahead of the game when it comes to technology for boat building. You know, they were. I remember when years ago when they bring these 3D printers out, I'm thinking, what are you going to do with this thing? Like, how's this going to work? And the way that they've set the pass for composite boating, so full composite stringers, transoms, all that gear, fully fiberglass lined floors, beautiful side pockets and all that sort of stuff, is they were really ahead of the game with that. But the thing that Quintrex and Cruise Craft both do is they're consistent with their work. They don't have good days and bad days. And that's something that hand-manufactured boats will always have. You know, if Johnny is on holidays, he's gone to Bermagui for 2 weeks, and now they've got Steve, the apprentice, building the boat today, you know, you're a bit unlucky. You know, these days it's all done to a regimented regime, and they just build things on par. It doesn't matter who's doing it, it's done properly, and they've gone through the right channels. You know, Quintrex is an example. They have the two biggest aluminium presses in the Southern Hemisphere. So what they do with these presses is, yes, A, they can shape bigger aluminium, thicker aluminium, but they can get it exactly the same for every single hull they've built. So they've got a plate hull, which is what they call a blade hull, and it's got this really, really fine entry, really sharp keel, and it flares out on the sides to get that stability. So when you're underway, you get that keel to cut the water. This slices it open. Yep. But then when you're underway or when you stop at rest, it gets that stability. And it doesn't matter what day that boat was built or who pushed the button, that press has made that aluminium sheet exactly the same as it did for the last 7,000 sheets. So you know, like when you go to McDonald's and you order a cheeseburger, whatever it is, you know what you're getting, right? Like it's been pumped out, you've had one before, and it's the same thing's coming through. So when you've been to your mate's 610 tried and bent the water, said, I like that thing. When you go to your Quintrex dealer and order one, you're actually going to get the exact same boat.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's things that a lot of boat manufacturers, if it's fiberglass, aluminium, whatever it is, you know, they can't achieve that. They just, it's all hand-laid, and, you know, they sort of knock it together and do this and do that. And you've got to use this jig and wedge it here to do this and blah, blah, blah. That's not the way of the future. That's not the way these things will be built. So I think getting back to your question is the composite will go through the whole range. You see a lot of boats using it now. I believe Cudacraft use it. Obviously, like Veach are doing some really cool things with their injected molding. I don't know if you've seen those things in Vanstar. Yeah. Mate, he's doing cool stuff. And they look so hot. Like, I only got that shape nailed. And I think you'll find your other trailer boat fiberglass manufacturers in the next couple of years will be all standard with composite material. And then if it goes to something else, you know, like high-performance stuff, they've always gone with lighter material, so that it's either less glass or it's made out of Kevlar or something like that. And that's just always been to go fast, but it's a prick to work with. Yep. So, you know, if you damage your boat, you park it up and bang it against a jetty or something, and you damage the Kevlar or whatever it's made out of, you need a specialist to build, you know, to repair that thing. And insurance companies are this are not going to enjoy Kevlar boats floating around. But they do that to get ultimate weight reduction. And then what they do to composite the weight reduction to keep the performance, especially in bigger waters, they run these massive ballast tanks. So, you know, you watch the cool stuff in America, and, you know, a lot of American boats have ballast. So, like, you watch these big, the big cats, like, you know, if it's a skater or a fountain or whatever it is, you know, and they're doing 120 mile an hour, they've got just a button, full the boat full of water, and just drop the whole thing. And that's where they get their ride quality when they're underway, but they get that really light, high performance thing. Thing the Americans have always had over Australian boat manufacturing is they've had production, you know. So whenever I speak to Cruise Craft as an example, I say, hey, I want you to do this, this, and this. He goes, yeah, sweet. Order another 50 boats and I'll do it. You know, like, I need to have production to do these things. And that was one of the reasons why we sold our manufacturing to Cruise Craft, is because that can help with their production when the time comes and they're ready to do that, if that's the case. Where in America, you know, they're pumping out so many more boats than what we are that they can really rejig things and reinvent the wheel, the boating wheel, I suppose, a little bit. You know, like, they were the first to really dabble with foam-filled flotation and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, like, especially pre-GFC, like in the 2005s and 2006, yeah, stuff like that, there was a company called Genmar, I think it was called, and they were Four Wings and all these different brands, Trophy and all this different stuff. And they were building thousands and thousands and thousands of fiberglass boats a year. And they just have the ability, like the motor vehicle market, to dabble R&D money wherever they want. And that's what the Americans have always been good at. You know, I get really excited by those American center console stuff that's out there at the moment.
We're a big fan of the Cats. Like, I love my cat. My sailfish. Like, absolutely love that boat. You know, when we finish playing around with the big stuff, we'll definitely look at, you know, another sailfish, a cat.
Absolutely.
Another cat somewhere. But I've been keeping an eye on Freeman Boatworks.
Yeah, amazing.
And they are doing some awesome cats and center console stuff as well. And I mean, you know, four 425 horsepower motors on the back of this thing. Like, this thing
incredible.
Yeah, you know, so.
You reckon we got fuel issues, mate? No, those guys are just pumping it through. Like, but I really love that stuff. You know, I love that high end. Even if you've got an eye for detail and you jump in those boats, like you had an opportunity to go to Miami boats or something like that, you get to see. Sometimes it's good from far from good, but most of that stuff is just so well built. It's incredible. And that's because they have, like we were talking about earlier, they've got the right protocols to build this boat. It doesn't matter who's on that day. It doesn't matter what's happening. That boat is going to be built exactly the same. Doesn't matter if it's January, February, Monday or Tuesday. You know, that boat is going to come out the same way. And that's really, really, really important for this sort of industry. To aspire to.
Yeah.
But those Americans, mate, they're crazy. Like, they're insane on horsepower. I'm not convinced a lot of them can drive that well.
Nah. But it's cool.
But you just drop those trim tabs down a little bit and just let those 450 horsepower motors in the back fly, and they're bananas. They're a different level. But getting back to what we do, you know, I really, really feel that that will be the next step in our boating. Will be really high-end, highly regimented, like the Australian builder's plate board. You know, those guys aren't playing around these days. That's a serious sort of game these days, and they're not letting under-regulated, not Australian-built, like Australian boat manufactured, as far as Australian builder's plate boats go to boat shows anymore. Yeah. You know, 10 years ago, you could rock up with a Peter Pan craft and not have a builder's plate on it and take it to the Melbourne boat show and knock out as many as you can. But these days, that's all highly regimented in the way that their buoyancy levels are tested and their maximum horsepower and all that sort of stuff. There is really a formula to the Australian builder's plate. It's not something that you sneezed upon. And if you don't have all your ducks in line when you get to the boat show, they will kick you out. They won't let you exhibit the boat shows. So I think what that will do is that will really put confidence in the end retail buyer that what they're buying is going to be, you know, it's not a fly-by-night sort of thing.
Yeah,
this guy's got the Australian builder's plate. He's done all the right things, and you know, you're buying with confidence, I suppose.
Yeah,
it's not a guy that's got a pipe dream of being a boat manufacturer and he's going to go to the boat show this year.
Yeah,
not so you know, that's I think going to be important for us moving forward. But what they actually make them out of and what material they use, you know, that might be the big technology jump in the next 5 to 7 years. Who knows? It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. So I suppose one last question before we sort of wrap it up. But if money wasn't an issue, what boat would you buy? I'm putting you on the spot now. So I know you've got your brands and I know you've got your favorites and, you know, you got to represent your boys. I get all that. But now this is no money, no issues. You could walk out of here right now and drop whatever money you wanted on whatever boat is out there. What would Sean Savage go and buy right now?
Okay, well, here's a long-winded answer a little bit, but it's sort of like the McDonald's thing again. Sometimes your eyes are a bit bigger than your mouth. So what I mean by that is, you know, you think I'm going to buy this massive thing, but I like being in control of my boat. I don't want to rely on crew and captains and stuff like that. If you went absolutely bananas, I like to sort of run the show a little bit. Maybe, you know, I like to be pushing the buttons and all that sort of stuff. So I feel I could comfortably, you know, if I had my options, I reckon I'd go like an M59 Maritimo. I love that shaft-driven internal staircase. You know, the big Volvos in there. I love those in that style of boat. I love that full beamed master bedroom where it goes the whole width of the boat, you know, like that sort of stuff gets me really, really excited. But that 59, 55 sort of foot, you can still put it on a 20 meter jetty, I think it is. And your, I think it's a 20 or 22 meter jetty you need, but you can, you know, you could comfortably move that around the coast, get in it, put the family in it, whatever you're going to do. And you can go from, you know, from Melbourne to Sydney in that thing. And you wouldn't need to have a full crew with you. I don't, you know, if you get that 70, 80 foot mark, you're really going to be relying on other people.
Yep.
And that's, you know, that's not what boating's about for me.
Well, it sounds like there's some thought going into this, mate.
Yeah, well, you got to have dreams, mate. You know, like sometimes you're sitting there and you're thinking, oh, I might just jump on boat sails and I might just lift my my values up a bit more, you know.
See what's
up, I'm up to the next level. You know, I love that stuff, and that's getting back to loving what you do. You know, I just love boats, and I love looking at different things and how things are done. But yeah, I think an M59 would be the Maritima would be the boat for me. How about yourself?
To be right now, I think, you know, there's always dreams. There's always, you know, you look at other stuff exactly like you, mate. I still jump on boat sails even though we've just bought this thing.
Yeah.
And have a look, and you're 100% right. I lift the value bracket and go, oh yeah, interesting. Yeah, if I can get Jackie to work for another 10 years, I could probably, you know, I could probably do that. Yeah, sweet. Or if I get another trip overseas, yeah, great. Or maybe entertain that idea.
Load it up.
But at the moment, look, the RIV has opened so many doors for us. It's massive. Like, it is a massive learning curve. You know, I've spoken to a few people now about going from the trailer boat to a permanently moored boat, and not being in the industry like you are. You know, I don't get to see everything all day every day. So it's very daunting, to be honest. The hardest part that I've had with the new boat is parking it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't mind maybe touching yours up every now and then, giving it a bit of a scratch against the marina, although you will hear some very strong language come from the but it's hitting someone else's pride and joy, because I know what we've had to do to get what we've got, and I don't want to be that guy that damages someone else's boat because of my incompetence. So
yeah, that's very true.
So learning how to park this thing without bow thrusters and all that sort of stuff, that's probably been the big one. But getting back to your question, I think at the moment we're pretty content. I'm so happy that we've gone and done it. I'm so happy that we're in a position to be able to do it. I mean, we had to sell the house to do it, so we've committed a fair bit to it. But the doors that it's opening, the learning that keeps me coming back. You know, I don't know what it was, but as a kid, and even as I've gotten older now and I've gotten back into my fishing and the game fishing and everything, nothing says, you know, in my opinion, nothing says you've made it like being on a big 40, 50 foot boat, backing down hard on a marlin with water coming over the transom, and you know, the captain up in the flybridge just controlling everything, and the crew down the bottom, all your mates, family, all that sort of stuff, working as a team, and just, you know, coming back so, like, yeah.
That's why you do it, mate. You know, the moments that you're thinking about right now, that's why you go to work and work hard, because you want to achieve your goals, and, you know, that's what it's all about. And what you're getting back to about daunting, you got to remember, a lot of people that haven't had boats before, they feel the same that you do about their 18-foot cuddy cabin. You know, they're thinking, oh, fuck, this is my issues. And that's why we get back so much into education. If someone took you out that day that knew everything about your boat and said, the next 2 hours, we're going to park this thing together, I'm going to show you three or four scenarios, we're going to practice it, you won't have an issue. You know, you'll learn it, you'll understand it. And that's what we drum into ourselves all the time, is every single time we take out this customer in their new boat, we want them to be 100% comfortable with most scenarios that they put themselves into. I was taught, I've been driving big boats since I was a little kid. I was lucky enough. And my dad said to me once, I was about 9 or 10, and I was in this, I think it was a 38-foot Mariner. Because I was the third kid, I think he was sick of teaching people, so he just sort of gave me the sticks and said, you're on, right? And he said to me, the slower you go, the softer you're going to hit things. You're never, ever in a rush when you're in a boat, right? So with this big stuff, sometimes you've really got to just let it come across a little bit, and those finer movements with the sticks are just enough. Sometimes when you get too aggressive with things and you get a bit nervy and there's a bit going on and you're starting to get a bit shifty with the sticks, you actually totally lose balance with the boat. And the thing that someone taught to me once, we were doing a big trip. I was looking after a friend of mine that captains like a 130-foot boat, and we're doing Sydney to Melbourne in it. We're driving along and I was riding a bit rough. It was pretty rough out there. And he said, do you hear that? And I said, oh, hear what? He goes, the boat, it's talking to us. You know, boats talk to you and you got to listen to them, right? Yep. So when you're going along and it's carrying on, and it's banging and crashing, it's trying to tell you it's not happy. So let's resolve the issue. And we changed our course a little bit and backed off a little bit and rode smooth as silk. So, you know, boats talk to you. There's no doubt about that. And sometimes the finer movements and the more subtle movements, you will achieve a lot more out of. You'll see, you know, I often say this to my customers that, you know, if you're in a helicopter or a plane and the pilot looks really busy and he's pushing lots of buttons and his hands are going everywhere, you know, he's more than likely out of control. The guy that's in control is normally very smooth and calm, and he's doing small adjustments all the time, but he's never trying to fix his faults. He's just adjusting things as he goes along. And, you know, I find parking that bigger stuff's very, very similar. You've got to have your plan and you've got to get that sort of back rope on, but you've got to really picture it before you get there and work out where you want to be and work out, you know, with those sticks, if you want to be going backwards and across, forwards and across, and just very, very slow, minute movements. Often, they often work for me. But the guy that's jolting the boat backwards and forwards and yelling at his deckies and all that sort of stuff, you know, normally he's got a bit more on his plate.
Yeah, so, right. Just, you're definitely not the first person to bring up the slow and smooth.
It is 100%. Step one.
Yep, and it's you're spot on. And I think that's been the biggest thing that, like, I've been remembering driving the boat, especially in the marina, out in the ocean.
Room for error. Yeah.
And I'm having spent basically 2 months living on it and bringing it down the coast and that, I'm really comfortable with that sort of stuff. There's obviously still, you know, you never stop learning.
Of course.
But in the marina, it's definitely, you know, slower.
That's when, the heart rate goes up a little bit more in the marina and you got a crowd and all that sort of stuff, but you're in that confined. I always baffled me how tight marinas are.
Yeah, you know? I was like, what the hell? I got in there. The dude's like, all right, mate, you're going to park in here. And I'm like, dude, I've literally
just... No chance, yeah.
From Sydney to here, and you want me to back it into that. it's not going to happen, mate. He's like, no. And he's talking me through it and everything. And I'm like really starting to get stressed. And I can feel sweat
Sydney's
running.
It's the worst.
And everything. We got it in there, but it was ugly. It was ugly.
Mate, I'm with you. When I picked up our boat from Sydney, this one, I was 4 inches away from this other Maritimo. I'm thinking, how am I even going to get out of here? Like, what's the go with these guys? And, but, you know, once you sort of put those engines in gear and move them out and sort of just get that feel for the boat, sometimes it all gels in a little bit, you know, like, but you've got to put yourself in that position and have good people around you and just take it easy and slow. And it doesn't matter if you're in a 10-foot Tinny or a 40-foot Riviera, you know, you've just really got to take your time and stay within your comfort zone. You know, a lot of people say to me when they look at a new cruise craft, they say, oh, does it go good in the rough, or is it good at this, or is it good at that? And with your motorbike experience, I actually use this theory a little bit. I say, well, look, picture a brand new R1 motorcycle, right? You take it to Phillip Island. The bike's capabilities well outweigh what you can actually do on this thing, right?
Yep.
So the boat is way more capable than what you'll ever want to put it through. But you won't actually have the capacity to drive this boat to its limits.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those things that the boat will always be more capable. You've got to keep yourself in safe and comfortable times or, you know, experiences in your life. So if you check out windy weather and it's blowing orange and it's 30 knots, today's not your day.
Yeah, you're not.
Nah. And getting back to that technology thing, we know this stuff now. We know it's 3 days out. I can jump on windy and, mate, unless it's blue, maybe a little bit of green, I ain't going. The boat is more capable to do it. I don't want to put myself through it. I want to have an enjoyable day, you know. Yeah. If the bite's on and it's a little bit orange and you're hardcore into it and this is your moment, yeah, you'll sit through it. But, you know, a lot of the time you just don't, you know, you don't have to put boats to their absolute limits. You know, you can just go out there and just enjoy yourself. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Nah, so look, mate, it's been awesome having you on the show. Really appreciate you taking some time out of your day and jumping on and giving us some awesome feedback. For everyone listening, obviously Streak Marine down in Melbourne, don't be afraid to get a hold of Sean and his team down there, especially if you're looking for a new boat or even a secondhand boat. He's got a few of those down there as well. The guys down there will 100% look after you. And I've got every confidence in saying once you deal with these guys, you'll more than likely go back a second, third, you know, fifth, sixth time. The customer experience that you get from these guys is phenomenal and second to none. And I can actually vouch for that, having bought our boat from you guys. So appreciate your time, mate. I hope everything works out with the corona stuff. I know there's a few things coming and I'm not going to spill the beans for you there. So I look forward to following a bit more of that story, and we may even get you back on the show maybe a bit later in the year or maybe next year for season 3 of the Hook podcast. But once again, really appreciate it, mate. I definitely got something out of tonight. I hope you did as well. I hope the listeners do. And yeah, don't be afraid to give the boys a call down there. Get in touch. Anything boating, even electronical, the guys there will help you out 100%. So really appreciate your time tonight, Sean.
Thank you, mate. It's been a pleasure and I've really enjoyed it myself. So I'd love to jump back on whenever we get the opportunity. And if there's any listeners out there that want some advice or would like to talk further, you know, that's what we're there for, and we'd love to help. So mate, thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
No problems, buddy. Have a good one.